Ready to broadcast the COVID-19 post-pandemic show. Anytime now. Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
You can testify, but you just can't win, because I'm here to tell you, you guilty as sin. Here comes the judge. Here comes the judge.
What would that Supreme Court look like? No, that was not somebody pretending to be Justice Sotomayor. Now, stop that. Supreme Court, quote-unquote, ruling yesterday on the president's mandates. Joining us now from the Pacific Legal Foundation, their policy director, Joe Lupino Esposito. Good morning, Joe. Welcome back to the program. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me again.
I appreciate it. And this is yet another one of these, I don't know if it's, you know, passing the buck or not. I mean, there were so many places the Supreme Court could have been far more declarative on this. And, you know, when the rulings seem to me to be, well, other courts are looking at it, that really doesn't fall in what you expect the Supreme Court to be all about, is it?
No, not at all. But I think in a lot of ways they did make at least a strong statement on the OSHA mandate, which I think was really a key piece of what we've been seeing a lot from this administration and their attempt to exercise a lot of executive power, because what they've been trying to say is that we can pull out any old statute that's on the books and declare that it is far more reaching than anything in Congress ever intended to do. So by shooting down the OSHA mandate in particular, I think the Supreme Court did make at least a strong statement there saying, look, this cannot continue. You can actually finding things in the law and determining that they mean more than they actually do.
If I understand their ruling correctly, and you know that's why I have you on the show, honestly, because I'm pretty sure I don't, but at least as thoroughly as you do, what they've said is the OSHA administrator has no authority to enforce these things. That's precedentially, in my mind, a pretty big hit for what Donald Trump used to call the swamp, these unelected bureaucrats that you name the agency, OSHA, EPA, FDA, that walk around like they're the head of the FBI.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. That's a big thing that we deal with at Pacific Legal Foundation a lot, which is the idea of separation of powers in the administrative state. Like you said, you know, these agencies are given some limited power by Congress, and some would argue just given too much power in the first place. But even so, the amount that they are given, they tend to want to exercise it past what Congress has intended. And I think what the Supreme Court here, both in the majority opinion and by the concurring opinion by Gorsuch, really laid out, I think, quite well, is saying that just because Congress has given some power to OSHA to do workplace safety and health does not mean that something that is sort of kind of tangentially touches on it would now sort of just envelop and allow them to just sort of rove the streets picking up new health and safety issues just because, well, someone works and may be affected by this. Mm-hmm. That would just be way too large of a mandate.
Well, and take us in, because I remember, you know, it seems like a forever ago, but OSHA really is designed to look for inherently dangerous things that are dangerous all the time and in a specific way, like a piece of machinery, which either is poorly designed or malfunctioning, or you know, best practices regarding like dry floors or things like that. Not the random happenstance of maybe one of your coworkers might, if something ran amok at Bonnaroo when they were there for the first time in 2 years, came back with the Omicron variant, you might get it. And if you had four comorbidities, which Dr. Walensky finally admitted the other day, then you might have a real adverse outcome from it. There were so many things that have to go into a tragic outcome of this that OSHA's mandate really didn't apply.
No, it really didn't. And, you know, OSHA kind of knew from the outset that they were going to have to try to finagle it in the first place. So what they did this under their emergency authority. And they said, well, because this is something that's emergent and new and scary, so we need to act sort of exceptionally, even under what our normal rules would be, which, again, under any sort of reasonable interpretation of what their power should be, you're not going to find that actual power there that they used here. But what the justices pointed out, I think, quite well, is to say that, look, this is such an emergency, according to you all, that after several years of being under this pandemic, that you put this into effect, and then it was announced first by the president, then you waited 2 months to pull it together, and then said, well, now we're just going to skip notice and comment. We're just going to push forward. We're going to just make this change. It's going to affect 85 million Americans, and, well, that's just something you're going to have to deal with. That's just something that obviously cannot stand. And if anything, we've seen the evidence that Congress right now would not have been able to pass this. Mm-hmm. The Senate took a vote just before the new year under the Congressional Review Act. You know, once the rule is submitted to Congress, Congress does have the ability to pull back on regulations. So they voted in the Senate, 52 votes, with a disapproval vote of this rule. Now, it's been held up in the House because there's a little more control in the House of how those votes happen when it comes to the Congressional Review Act. And not surprisingly, Nancy Pelosi is not allowing those to happen.
Sure.
But we know at least one half of one branch of government would not have favored this now. So the idea that there's a clear mandate and that this is what Congress wants them to do or was originally intended by Congress is sort of preposterous.
It's Joe Lupino Esposito, Pacific Legal Foundation. Joe, I got to run to a break here. Hang on. I want to continue this coverage of the Supreme Court ruling next on Joe Thomas.
Like us. Follow us. Just don't touch that dial.
What is it, hot? Apple.
Charlottesville's homepage, Seville 1075 and 1260 WCHV.
Inside the policy, you need a law. You need a rule. You need the coercive power of government to say, do this.
Joe Thomas in the morning, Supreme Court ruling. Thank you for letting us be of service.
We're visiting with Pacific Legal Foundation expert Joe Lupino Esposito. On the Supreme Court ruling that came down sort of against the vaccine mandate, sort of basically saying, well, you can't enforce it, so it can't happen. But they also said for healthcare workers, because they're already required to get lots of vaccinations anyway, that can go forward. And again, this is where I worry it's a mixed bag. Right before we went to break, you were talking about how they looked at the OSHA policy and how it was enacted. Well, that still implies that if OSHA had done it right, they'd have been okay with it. Again, constitutional is as constitutional does, and I just don't know if saying, well, if you had public comment for a couple of weeks, then you could have done something unconstitutional. I don't know if that's a good precedent either, Joe. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right about that. And the good thing is, I think that they were very thorough in their opinion as to say that, you know, not only did they have this error in the way that they processed it through notice and comment, you know, the emergency that wasn't really much of an emergency, but then they also did hit directly on the statute itself, saying that this is far beyond what the statute from OSHA permits and what Congress would have permitted. So that's sort of the fail-safe on this as well, that it really hit them in two ways, saying that you can't just declare something an emergency and then, first of all, not even act like it is an emergency, but you also just can't declare it and just say that therefore it is so. But then secondarily said that even if you had done this, you know, you would still have the roadblock that you don't have the power to do this anyway.
What does this do to employers of any size? I think the question that is hiding in the closet of all the cocktail parties is insurance. What does this do to our insurance rates? What does it do to our liability if somebody comes into our place of business and gets COVID? I've heard this for almost a year and a half now, Joe, that there are people in the workplace, people who own businesses, especially public-facing ones, that COVID-19 is going to be the new I've slipped on your sidewalk tort case, and that there's going to be those late-night TV legal commercials saying, have you got COVID-19? Can you tell us where you got it? Call 1-800-WIN-WIN now. And there'll be class action suits all over the place.
Yeah, you know, that's always a possibility. I think there's no clear direction from what we've seen so far. I mean, There's been a lot of talk about what exceptions can be made and would be made for someone who was contracted. But as we know, it's hard to do a lot of this tracking and contact tracing, has been the case throughout all of this. So it kind of remains to be seen, if you can actually hold someone liable for not having a certain type of practice, whether it's a mask mandate or a vaccine mandate, because, the courts didn't get into it here at all. It's hard to say, but they didn't also touch on the idea of the efficacy of vaccines. I certainly don't want to open up that can of worms, but I mean, I think that would be part of that debate if you get down to the insurance claims and everything else to say, well, what could you have done to mitigate this problem? As everyone has been telling us, the science changes. So it's going to be hard to say that because 1 week folks enforce what a rule was from CDC or otherwise, or follow the science other than what CDC said and went along with it or did not, it's going to be hard to show that cause and effect.
Boy, there's a court case I really would like to see, is if somebody could actually bring the efficacy of the COVID-19 shots and whether they qualify as vaccines and whether, given the treatments that are available, the emergency use protocols should have been permitted. Boy, that would be a court case I'd like to see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. And, it was funny. I think a lot of us were curious if the court would comment on that here. It had come up in a lot of discussion around this to say, well, you're requiring this vaccine. And I believe it was Justice Alito in the argument kind of mentioned it as well, saying, well, what can we show here that by doing this mandate, this actually is going to have the intended effect in the first place? So, again, putting aside the legality of it and all the issues we talked about of how it's outside of OSHA's bounds, is this really going to help? And what's funny is that the majority really was clear that they're saying we're not talking about what the vaccines really mean and how effective they are. And they noted that in the dissent in the HHS mandate case. They stated the same as well, that this is not the debate for today. But it is interesting to see that in the dissent from the Democrat-appointed judges in the OSHA mandate, they clearly put blame on the court, saying this will cost lives by not having this mandate. So they're sort of calling that up, but not really spelling it out. So it's kind of interesting that kind of just, it was left there, and really they put a lot of blame on their colleagues, saying that they are at fault for doing this. If they do believe that, I think what their colleagues are saying is that Congress should act if they think that this is really that necessary. Instead, they pointed out that Congress has done just the opposite, really.
Well, and considering some of the wild rhetoric, garnering, and when was the last time a Supreme Court justice got four Pinocchios anywhere, never mind from the Washington Post, for just sort of making up numbers? I mean, that's one thing if a talk radio show host who frequently says 99.3% of all statistics are made up on the spot anyway. But, when you have a Supreme Court, two Supreme Court justices just pulling numbers out of the air, as if they're trying to win some jury over, that was really, in the annals of Supreme Court history, that's not going to be a bright spot, I don't think. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, it was a very odd thing, to see that from Justice Sotomayor in particular, but she also had some sort of legal errors as well about who had the power to do this. And I think it's actually, frankly, reflected in the joint opinion between those three justices, Kagan and Breyer and Sotomayor, saying that, look, this is, what is the federal government to do about this? And I think what the majority is saying is, that's not the question. They have nothing to do with this. It is not within the realm of what they can do, at least not the way that this statute is written. And the question came up in the majority opinion. The question was, who decides? Who decides who gets to do these types of things and have these types of mandates? And they said clearly, if we want to talk about sort of longer effects of this and other potential ways this could affect other people, states do have this type of power inherently. It's in the Constitution that they could do something like this and put down a mandate like this. Maybe we will see that action from states saying, we're going to step up where the federal government hasn't. On a political note, I think that's kind of what we've seen from the federal government and the current administration. They've made comments toward the end of the year, beginning of this year, saying that, this is not a problem that can be solved by the federal government. We need to rely on the states. And from a legal standpoint, at least, they're mostly correct. I mean, that's the way this is meant to be done. Now, whether or not those mandates will be constitutional under state constitutions, that of course remains to be seen. But just from the onset, the idea that the federal government should be able to solve this problem was just a tough one to make constitutionally. And we've seen them strike out in a few different ways. We've seen it here. We've seen it in the CDC eviction cases that PLF was a part of as well, where they tried to say the CDC could stop someone from being evicted from their apartment. That's obviously far beyond the bounds of what the federal government can do. But at the same time, if states wanted to do it, and they have, they are permitted to do it unless their state constitution says otherwise.
Joe, we got to run to the news here. Joe Lupino Esposito, PacificLegal.org. Visit them there, but I appreciate your insight. We're going to visit a little while later on in the program with Karen Harned of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. She and her organization, one of the plaintiffs in the case the Supreme Court just ruled on yesterday as well. You and me, 434-964-1075, coming up next. I'm Joe Thomas in the morning.
Locally sourced, hand-picked, and craft-roasted news every morning with Joe Thomas in the morning and all day on Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Exogen would like you to know about an important study just released by the FDA. It confirms what the medical community has known all along. Non-contact thermometers are not accurate. The study also reports that they fail to meet FDA requirements for accuracy in labeling. With new strains of COVID on the rise, we can't afford to tolerate the rampant false temperature readings from non-contact thermometers. Accurate temperature measurements are essential. You need Exogen thermometers because they are accurate and backed by over 100 clinical studies. Be sure, be accurate with Exogen. Learn more at Exogen.com.
Frustrated with stains? Davis Appliance is your destination for Maytag laundry pairs built with extra power to take on everyday tough stains. Some stains dissolve best in hot water, others in cold. Now you can fight both with a push of a button. Select Maytag washers feature the extra power button to boost stain fighting performance with dual temperature wash. Stop in today and shop select Maytag laundry pairs that deliver extra power from start to finish. Davis Appliance, 1202 East High Street, or call 434-295-6920.
Team coverage of local news first coming up next on WCHV.
Join Mark Patrick's seminars and lose weight or stop smoking guaranteed for only $49.99. Weight loss seminar Sunday, January 16th at the Holiday Inn Hotel in Charlottesville. Time is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Registration begins at 10:30 a.m. Stop smoking seminar starts at 2 p.m. Registration starts at 1:30 p.m.
The Joe Thomas in the Morning Show from the Automated Office System Studios on Seville 1075 and 1260 WCHV. AM and FM, Charlottesville.
And pour me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care.
Here comes y'all, you in voice this morning.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Apparently timing is my issue, not voice. Oh, okay, voice two. 434-964-1075. Is how you get to us through the telephone. If you have the free Seville 107.5 smartphone app, and I call it that, I just really caught myself because sometimes it's just easy. Call letters of the radio station. I've been around since 1933 to just say WCHV, but it takes longer to find that app if you type WCHV at the Google Play or the iStore. So I say Seville 107.5. It comes right up. Got a couple of folks on the line. Good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Joe. It's Joel. Good morning.
Good morning, Joel. Hang on 1 second. I just want to grab the second. Oh, I missed the second line. Patience is everything. Well, ring back in while Joe tells us what he's got on his mind this morning. We've been into a bunch of stuff. So what is it that's brought you to the phone?
My question is, I wish your guest was still there, but my question is, based off of the Supreme Court decisions, we had the 6-3 decisions. Now, of course, are the opinions based off of politics? Are they political-based opinions? Or are they opinions based off of their own internal philosophy? Are they based off of constitutional law?
Well, you would hope, and I think you and I are both the kind of hardcore people, Alito-esque or Scalia-esque view of it, that, you know, if you write an opinion at the Supreme Court, it should be based on your interpretation of the constitutional laws applicable to the case before you. Unfortunately, what you're going to see in this is a whole lot of, I really don't like this. And this starts, I mean, it started a long time ago. I mean, these are not the first clowns in gowns to do this. I mean, you had the sanctified Oliver Wendell Holmes that looked at a bill that said the government of Virginia can sterilize people because they need public assistance and said, yeah, I think that's okay. And, you know, issued a ruling that said three generations of imbeciles were enough. Oh, God, every time I think about that ruling, I get a shiver. But that's man's inhumanity to man in Supreme Court Chief Justice form. But, you know, Sotomayor and all these folks, the dissenting opinions, used to be a great place to find law. So even in, you know, the Buck versus Bell case, the dissenting opinions often are where you would find the seeds to build new cases and then overturn unconstitutional law, even if they were upheld at the first blush by the Supreme Court. But I don't think you're going to get that now, because it is. It's all political to help stay in good graces with the party that appointed me. And John Roberts is the worst case. That's why I said, dear Mrs. Roberts, can Johnny have his set? Can you take Johnny's set out of the cabinet so he can take him to work with him? Because, I mean, this stuff is just, well, if they filled out the paperwork correctly, we'd have been okay. I mean, it's just ridiculous stuff there, Joel.
And one thing I wish they would rule on, or somebody would bring it up with government, I know there's a separation of the three, but the executive order powers that it seems governors, you know, the president, and I understand there's certain, you know, executive powers, but it just seems like they use that as a utility versus just using it for actual, you know, dire need.
Yeah, the dysfunction of the way, especially the federal, but I think Richmond, a lot of it, there are bills. I think Mark Peek, a senator from this area, has a bill that would limit the amount of time a governor of Virginia can have executive authority. Let me get to line two here, Joel. You have a blessed weekend, sir. Stay warm. Good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Joe. AJ,
what's on your mind, sir?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that if, you know, Medicare, you know, I guess hospitals and things like that take Medicare and Medicaid, they can force the people to take the vaccine. Well, what would stop them, that setting the precedent that if a state takes federal funds, then they can mandate the people in the state to take the vaccine?
Well, we've already seen it. The University of Virginia, bastion of science, told their employees that in an effort to not lose millions of dollars in federal funding, they were going to fire anyone who didn't get the COVID jab. And you're like, well, if this hall of science can't be about the science and is just about the cash grab from the government. And this is why the federal government is trillions upon trillions of dollars in debt, because they continue to take from Peter to pay Paul. There becomes fewer and fewer Peters and more Pauls, but they keep just printing more money. And it's, you know, the whole, was it Wallops Island, Goat Island? It was one of the islands where they started the Federal Reserve System, where they can just print more money over. Oh, we lost AJ there. And of course, then you get into the Build-A-Bear group and all the, you know, but, you know, these are real things. The federal government just prints what they need. This is how you wind up with 7% inflation. And then the regulatory capture leads you to a 300% spike in the cost of fertilizer to your family farms. How's that going to hit that 7% inflation? Anyway, State Senator Bryce Reeves coming up next. Our coverage of the opening of the General Assembly is next.
It's like your radio is wearing a Let's Go Brandon t-shirt.
Let's go Brandon, I agree.
Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
You can testify, but you just can't win, because I'm here to tell you guilty as sin. Here comes the judge.
Supreme Court, and I'd like to call them rulings. They do have the force, but I want to get the perspective from one of the plaintiffs in the case, from the National Federation of Independent Business. Karen Harned is on the Newsmakers line with us. Karen, thank you for taking some time out with us today in the wake of the Supreme Court justice's ruling on the vaccine mandates. What is your feeling coming forward from it? Are you celebrating, or are you like, oh, it wasn't what we were hoping for? Is it somewhere in the middle? How are you doing?
Yes, thanks for having me, Joe. We were thrilled. I immediately started hearing from business owners across the country that were breathing a huge sigh of relief. Look, if this mandate were to have taken effect, we knew from our members that workers were going to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is at a time where 49% of business owners across this country are trying to find qualified workers. So that was the last thing they needed as small businesses are trying to come out of out of the pandemic and try to recover. So we were very happy that the Supreme Court really agreed with us on all of our arguments as to why we thought this was illegal.
Now, if we see this and we were watching these airlines, I mean, big businesses, you know, canceling services because they don't have enough staff, and they're all trying to dodge the idea that it's because their mandates have driven huge percentages of their staff away. But when you're, and we are here at Monticello Media, a small business, if I was sent home because I didn't match some protocol, that's a huge hit to the business. So you're really talking about folks out on a tightrope without a net.
100%. And we really, as the representatives, independent business, you know, we were really focusing on those employers with 100 to 499, you know, 500 mm-hmm. employees. And they really, this was going to be a hard hit for them. All of our business owners right now are working overtime to keep their businesses up and running because of the labor shortage. They could not afford to lose any more employees. We heard that time and time and time again.
Karen Harnid from the National Federation of Independent Business, NFIB, one of the plaintiffs that was in front of the Supreme Court for the ruling yesterday. Let me ask you, because I hear this and from almost the beginning of COVID, there's a concern amongst businesses regarding tort, regarding their liability. If somebody claims that they were in my coffee shop and I got COVID from you, and there has been concern, and in some ways, some folks were hoping the federal government or at least the state governments would make rules, kind of putting guardrails up on that. What do you hear from your members regarding that concern?
Right. Well, that was a very big concern at the beginning of the pandemic, and we got a lot of calls from members asking, you know, do you have a draft waiver? You know, we can have people sign. I am not hearing it as much as the pandemic has continued. However, I have followed this, and there have been literally thousands of cases that have been filed against businesses. It has tended to be against bigger businesses mm-hmm. for things like refunds and that sort of thing. I have been encouraged that I have not been hearing as much from our members yet, but I don't know if this is going to be something ongoing where it just takes a little bit. You know, maybe the trial lawyers decided to wait a little bit before they started, you know, filing these suits. And, you know, that's always a concern.
Well, Karen, I know that, you know, the next shoe, and I read in the ruling that, you know, they said, well, the Congress really didn't give OSHA this authority to do this. You know, it seems like there's a crack in the armor there where Congress could come back and give OSHA the authority to do this. Is this a concern for your businesses in the NFIB?
Well, I mean, yes, we do not support the mandate. We do not want a mandate, regardless of who does it, though we felt that it was definitely outside of OSHA's authority to do so. That said, you know, Congress, in the Senate at least, they voted against this rule. So mm-hmm. we have a majority of the Senate right now that thinks this rule should not happen or go into effect. So if those votes hold, we should be all right. Look, business owners across the country have taken this virus seriously from the very beginning.
Sure.
I know this because we're hearing from them. They're trying to keep customers, workers, and themselves free of COVID, and that will continue regardless of a mandate. We do not need a mandate. Those efforts are underway and will continue.
And we've said this, we've talked with local business leaders as well. We still don't have a grasp on what the customers are going to want when we finally feel like we can put whatever variant in the rearview mirror and go forward. So they've also got that to worry about is, you know, what is my customer base going to want?
Correct. Yeah, no, this has been a very tricky thing for business owners to navigate. I mean, the good news with the small business owner is they are very innovative, entrepreneurial, and, you know, can roll with the punches easier sometimes than the bigger businesses. But this one has been very hard, particularly in light labor shortage, inflation, supply chain. I mean, all of those issues are hitting them really hard right now.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that your group has been, and coming up next after our news break is Congressman Bob Good from Virginia's 5th District. You're pushing hard because the other whammy in this is the federal government has been throwing money around. You know, even drunk sailors are calling saying you're making us look bad. There's tax increases and a lot of attacks on business owners for being business owners and not, you know, nonprofits, apparently. Talk about your stand against those taxes before we have to let you go.
Absolutely. When you look at much of what's called the Build Back Better Act, it is build the taxes back into the tax code for small businesses, and that is not what they need right now. They really benefited from the tax cuts that happened under the last administration, and they do not want those rising, particularly now where they're still trying to get their business up and running to pre-pandemic levels. And so a tax increase is the last thing a small business owner needs right now. And we are fighting that aggressively in Congress.
Well, and of course, we've got our General Assembly. We need to deregulate on these businesses and let them go do what they're good at doing. Karen Harnett from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, congratulations on the Supreme Court ruling on the mandates, and we really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Tuned in to you as much as you are tuned into us. Fox News updates every half hour on Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.